Matthew 27 from verse 62. The next day, the one after preparation day, the chief priests and the Pharisees went to Pilate. "Sir," they said, "we remember that while he was still alive, that deceiver said, 'After 3 days I will rise again.' So give the order for the tomb to be made secure until the third day. Otherwise, his disciples may come and steal the body and tell the people that he has been raised from the dead. This last deception will be worse than the first." "Take a guard," Pilate answered. "Go and make the tomb as secure as you know how." So they went and made the tomb secure by putting a seal on the stone and posting the guard. After the Sabbath, at dawn on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look at the tomb. There was a violent earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven and, going to the tomb, rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning, and his clothes were white as snow. The guards were so afraid of him that they shook and became like dead men. The angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid, for I know that you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here. He has risen, just as he said. Come and see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples, 'He has risen from the dead and is going ahead of you into Galilee. There you will see him. Now I have told you.' So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid yet filled with joy, and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly, Jesus met them. 'Greetings,' he said. They came to him, clasped his feet, and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, 'Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee, where they will see me.' While the women were on their way, some of the guards went into the city and reported to the chief priests everything that had happened. When the chief priests had met with the elders and devised a plan, they gave the soldiers a large sum of money, telling them, 'You are to say his disciples came during the night and stole him away while we were asleep. If this report gets to the governor, we will satisfy him and keep you out of trouble.' So the soldiers took the money and did as they were instructed. And this story has been widely circulated among the Jews to this very day."
Evening Five, you well? You sounded good in the songs, which is great. My name is John. I'm one of the ministers here. I hope that I might get to see you after the service if you're visiting with us particularly. But let's get into this. I just lost my sermon. Just talk amongst yourselves for a moment. Oh, there we go. Friends, I want to start by saying I have to admit that I've had a fascination with tattoos for some time, though I've never been inked because of my taste in art. It just morphs over time. What I think looks good now is not what I thought looked good when I was in year 12 or an undergraduate at university. Though I have sat over the last few years mesmerized by these kind of tattoos. These are trash polka tattoos. Rich has got one on his left arm, and I'm fascinated by those kind of tats. They kind of come to life for me, but time will tell whether I still like them in due course. I might get to an age where they might give me one free because an old man and so on. But anyway, I dream. Some tats... Well, I heard about some old woman once went into a tattoo parlor. She was 99 in the shade, and they took pity upon her and gave her one for free. Not sure if the skin would take it. But anyway, so back to, I've been mesmerized, but then there are some tats that leave me scratching the head, like this one. And then this one. You kind of look at those and you think, what? I suppose you could get this tat on the front, though. If you're not sure what's wrong with that, your English teachers have let you down. That's all I can say. Those kind of tats are right up there with the bravado when you say at a restaurant, "Chili, I can eat chili. It doesn't matter how hot it is, I'm a man, I eat chili." But as soon as you put it in your lips, a ball of fire leaps into the back of your throat and it burns like crazy. And that's not the worst bit. Oh, no. 8 or 10 hours later, there's a super hot afterburn that comes and tells you that chili burns all the way through your system. Some regrets are not so easy to live with. Last year, 19-year-old Taylor Smith pushed her friend, Jordan off the Moulton Falls Bridge northeast of Vancouver. Jordan had climbed the fence along with all of her friends to jump off into the river below, and the friends were cheering her on, and then Jordan became aware of the height, 18 metres above the river. 18 metres kind of doesn't sound big, but let me give you an idea of it. If you can see this first horizontal bar here from the floor, that's 4.5 metres. The next one up is another 4.5. Those two bars distance from the floor, 9 metres. To get to 18 metres, you've got to go outside, look up at the cross on the top of our building. 18 metres is where she stood. From the ledge, the proportions confronted Jordan, and her face in the video tells us that she was conflicted. It was clear that she was terrified, but everyone wants her to jump, and if I jump, I'll be a legend. But she wanted to crawl back over the fence and have to face the jeers of her friends. In that moment, right in that indecision, Taylor pushed Jordan off the bridge. And everyone, and I mean everyone in the video, is cheering and hooting for joy and delight until Jordan hit the river 3 seconds later. She broke 6 ribs, punctured both lungs, tore all the muscles off one of her shoulders, developed a hematoma behind her throat, and really deep purple, black bruises all over her body. Physically, Jordan is healing, but mentally, she's battling with anxiety and panic attacks. In court, the judge sentenced Taylor to 38 days on a county work crew and 2 days in jail, and then the judge looked at Taylor and said, "Your sentence begins now." They put her hands behind her back, handcuffed her, and led her out of the courtroom while she sobbed. The friendship between Taylor and Jordan is over. What wouldn't Taylor give to get a reset? It's one thing for the ink on your skin to be wrong. It's quite another thing to have ink on your soul. How do you live with that? A word said, a text sent when you were in the zone. It seemed hilarious at the time, but the fallout is catastrophic. Who doesn't want that kind of ink to be scrubbed out of their soul? Who doesn't want a reset, a start over? Well, Jesus says, "I can scrub the ink from your soul. I will give you a reset, a start over, just like I did my first band of followers on the first Easter Sunday." Now, Jesus had handpicked these young men to follow him, but on Good Friday, all of them abandoned him, the Bible tells us. His head disciple, his lead disciple, Peter, went further and denied knowing Jesus not once or twice, but 3 times. And the New Testament tells us that the women who followed Jesus were left shocked by his death. Jesus, the one who never spoke down to them or treated them as though they were mere possessions. Jesus, the one who never urged them to be feminine nor jeered them for being female. Jesus offered them a place in his kingdom, even them. They had never known a man like Jesus, but now he's dead. Any dreams that they had of being a different person, of having a second chance, now lay as cold as Jesus' body in the tomb, crushed under the weight of the tombstone. To his first band of followers, Jesus said on Easter Sunday, "I'll give you a reset. I'll scrub the ink from your soul." Jesus said to his disciples, or to the women, "Go tell the disciples," he said, "first of all, don't be afraid. Go tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me. I will give you a reset in Galilee," he says. And he offers the same to us. The question, though, is this: how can we be sure? Like, can you trust Jesus? Con artists invade our space so often, you get skeptical of a really good offer. So a little while ago, I was trying to sell one of my surfboards on Gumtree. I set it at a reasonable price. It's a really good surfboard. I thought it was okay. An SMS came through from a Judith asking me if my board was still on sale. She was keen to buy. She followed that up with this email: "Please ignore any other requests from other buyers. I don't mind adding an extra $50 for a quick sale so that you'll be sure I'm interested for an immediate purchase. And then Judith attached her driver's license so I could see she was legit. So let's show that. I blanked out stuff to protect the innocent, and you'll see why in a minute. Then a follow-up email came through from Judith. Judith had paid $1,580 into my PayPal account for the board and transport of the board to wherever she was. All I had to do was buy $550 worth of Steam wallet cards and send a photo through. Then I got an email from PayPal, which is this, saying to Judith that your payment of $1,580 has been paid to John Gray. But for safety reasons, we're holding on to that until we get confirmation that the Steam wallet cards have been purchased and sent through. Please ensure that John Gray sends these through. Now, my spidey senses are starting to tingle at this point. $1,580 is way more than the board was worth. You can buy a brand spanking new one for less than that and have it delivered to your door for less than that. But I wanted to sell my board, and I thought, what the heck? Let me find out what a Steam wallet card is and go in on that. I was about to buy them when another email arrived. This all happened within a space of 40 minutes at home. And this email said, "Hi, John, I was about to make a payment when I received this from the pickup agent. Please have a look at the copy of the email I've got." And they're saying, "We're not going to pick the board up until we've received proof that John Gray has purchased $550 worth of Steam wallet cards. He's got to scratch the thing off the front, take a photo, send it through." At this point, my spidey senses have gone off the charts, way off the charts. And so I looked at all the evidence that I had been given. I noticed that there was punctuation and spelling mistakes in more than one email. I Googled Judith's name and address from the license that she sent through, and it raised questions in my mind about whether she was still on the planet or not. While Steam wallet cards are legit, I thought, why would PayPal ask me to do this when for years they've just asked me for my Visa card number, which is highly secure? I concluded that Judith was not Judith, but some kid after Steam wallet cards to feed their online gaming addiction. Judith promised much more than I was hoping for, but in the end, she was a total letdown. I did think of emailing back to say, "Hey, thanks for your business, Judith. You can expect a special delivery soon. I passed your details on to a really good friend of mine, Commander So-and-so. He runs the local police station. He says he's very keen to talk to you." So what do we do with Jesus when he says, "I will give you a start over. I will scrub the ink from your soul"? If he's offering to scrub the ink out of your soul, can you trust him? Well, let's examine the evidence. If you have a Bible there or you have it on your device, we're in Matthew 27 and 28, though most of the stuff we're going to look at comes up on the screen. So let's look at the evidence. Firstly, Jesus was killed dead. The Romans were very good at transitioning live people into a dead state. No one disputed that Jesus was dead. In fact, as we will see, no one disputes any of the evidence that I will look at with you. The women saw Jesus died, and they watched Joseph of Arimathea put Jesus' body in the tomb. You can see that from Matthew 27, verses 59 to 61. Joseph took the body, placed it in his new tomb that he'd cut out of the rock. He rolled the stone in front of it and went away. Mary Magdalene and the other Mary were sitting opposite the tomb. They saw the dead body go into the tomb. He was dead. And no one disputes this again. The Pilate, the governor of Israel, he doesn't dispute that Jesus was dead. The chief priests and the Pharisees knew that Jesus was dead. They even put a guard at the tomb and sealed the stone to make sure no one got in or out. And we see that in the text from Matthew 27:65. "Take a guard," Pilate said. "Go make the tomb as secure as you know how." So they went and made the tomb secure by putting a seal on the stone and posting a guard. Jesus was killed dead. Second piece of evidence. The earthquake happens on Sunday morning. We see that in Matthew 28, verses 2 and 3. There's a violent earthquake, And the angel of the Lord came down from heaven and, going to the tomb, rolled back the stone, sat on it. His appearance was like lightning. Everybody at the tomb, Mary Magdalene, the other Mary, and the soldiers, experienced the earthquake and saw the angel, who looked like a flash of lightning. Everyone saw it. No disputing the evidence. But there is a difference in how they responded. The women were wide-eyed, scared. But look at verse 4. The soldiers played dead soldiers. See what it says there? The guards were so afraid of him, they shook and became like dead men. Close their eyes, lie down. Sometimes men are like this. Years ago when I was at university, a group of us went out to see a movie. It was one of the horror movie thing. And one of the girls said to me, one of my friends said, "Can I sit next to you so that if I'm scared, I can grab your arm?" And I think my outside voice said, "Sure." I fear it said, "Sure." But anyway, she sat next to me. And the movie was intense. And as the tension built and some evil dude was about to come out and do something, everyone's quiet. You know, it's like that in the movie. It gets really quiet. "I'm supposed to grab your arm," she shouted out in front of a couple of hundred people. So sometimes Jesus was killed dead. There's an earthquake and they saw an angel. The third piece of evidence is the angel points to the empty tomb. He says, I know you're here to look for Jesus. I know that. But he's not here. He's risen just as he said he would. Come, have a look. There's no doubt that the women, even though scared witless, looked inside. They needed to see for themselves, was he alive? And there's no doubt that the soldiers had a look. They had to wait till the angel went and the women went away because they were playing dead soldiers, remember? But I reckon when everyone left, they got up and went and had a look. Now, why do I think this? Because in Matthew 28, verse 11, we're told some of the guards went into the city and reported to the chief priests everything that had happened. Everything. Now, what's more, the chief priests never denied that the tomb was empty. Never denied it. Which means any suggestion that the women went to the wrong tomb is complete nonsense. In the 40 years that I've been doing ministry, I have never met a woman who went to the wrong graveside to mourn a loved one. They may have tears streaming down their faces, but they're not so blind that they go to the wrong grave. And if the women, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary, had gone to the wrong tomb, the soldiers would have piped up and said, "Ladies, over here." Jesus was killed dead. There was a frightening earthquake, an angel like a flash of lightning turned up. The tomb is empty. And the question is, well, how does that help us trust Jesus? A good question. We need to examine a little more information. Fourth thing is, Jesus turns up. See this in verse 9? Suddenly Jesus met them. "Greetings," he said, as though he was out for a Sunday morning walk, which is what he was doing Sunday morning. He's just out for a walk. He turns up, though, in a real body. A real physical body that the women were able to hold on to. We're told here that they clasped his feet and worshipped him. I think, what must that have been like? They saw him die on Roman gallows. They watched him being placed dead in a tomb. They fall on their faces because he now stands before them resurrected. One clasped the right foot, I imagine, the other the left foot. And then I wonder, did their fingers touch the holes in his feet? And did they begin to trace the hole? Maybe the holes were in his heels, like this photo suggests. This gruesome discovery was made around Jerusalem a number of years back. It's dated from the first century. And it suggests that Romans, when they crucified men, would nail the heel bones to the upright because that meant that the body would stay in place. I took this photo a number of years ago. You can see this artifact in the museum in Israel. It's from the first century, like I said. Did the women, as they clasped Jesus' feet, gently, tenderly, painfully, trace the holes and wonder if the scars still hurt. I can't help but think that at that point the scars may have sent a shudder through both Marys, because Jesus said he was going to be crucified for the sin of the world. And that meant their sins. And that meant it was their sins that caused those holes. The soldiers would have seen, or at least heard, Jesus and the women talking. Again, they might have been playing dead soldiers. Their eyes were closed, but they were not deaf. And again, some of the guards go and report to the chief priests everything that had happened. No one denies any of this evidence. Well, you know, you could say to me, John, maybe the evidence is all made up. You know, it could have been, I have to admit, it could have been. So we need to look at one more piece of evidence. This is easily overlooked, but it is a significant piece of evidence. Look at the text with me as we go through. In chapter 28, verse 1, we are told, look at these words, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to look. Keep the names in mind as we go to verse 5, where it tells us, and the angel said to the women, Mary Magdalene and Mary. And then we go to verse 8, and so the women, Mary Magdalene and Mary, hurried away from the tomb. And then 2 verses later, Jesus turns up and he meets them, the women. And then we read on in one more place, I think. Jesus said to them, the women. All the evidence that we've looked at, every last shred of it, the whole report is placed in the hands of women. Shockingly, neither the chief priests nor the elders attack this evidence, though they could well have. In the ancient world, you see, women were not allowed to testify in court because you couldn't trust them. The women fell into the same category as Gentiles, which is most, if not all, of us. The same category as minors, deaf mutes, undesirables such as gamblers, the insane, corrupt money handlers, and pigeon racers. You can never trust a pigeon racer. And so you could not trust a woman. And so as confronting as this is in the ancient world, a woman's testimony was worthless. So maybe the chief priests thought that no one would ever listen to the women because any first century reporter, anyone worth their salt, would never record a woman as a witness, let alone a wide-eyed witness. The kind of thing would simply threaten the credibility of the report. And so maybe the chief priests thought, we don't need to attack or undermine the women because who's going to listen to them anyway? But the New Testament, without any sense of embarrassment, tells us all this evidence is entrusted to women. This is stunning. It's absolutely stunning because it tells us the New Testament writers recorded everything as it happened. This evidence is not fabricated. The report is entirely accurate. So, can we trust Jesus? The evidence says yes. You see, with his resurrection, everything he said, all the promises that he awakened within us, all the dreams that he stirs up within us, all of that is now established on the basis of all this evidence. It's established for all people, for all time. And so he looks down the tunnel of time in history and says to us in Matthew 28, verse 10, I will scrub the ink from your soul. I will give you a new start. I will take away your regrets. Come, meet me in Galilee, he says. Well, why Galilee? Well, it's because where he started ministry. It's where he started to form his first band of followers. James and John, sons of thunder. Philip and Nathanael. Andrew and his brother Peter, the one who denied ever knowing Jesus, not once, not twice, but three times. Come, meet me in Galilee, and we will start again.
Well, what do you do with such an offer? What will you do? What will I do with that? Well, you could ignore it. You could look at all the evidence, think about Jesus' call for a start over. You could look at all the evidence. Again, no one denies any of this evidence, not one person. You could do all of that, think about Jesus, and then conclude the whole thing could be ignored, because that's what the chief priests and the elders did. Let me take you to Matthew 28, verses 12 and 13. These are not on the screen. Look at this. When the chief priests had met to think about what the soldiers had said to them, when the chief priests had met with the elders, they devised a plan. They gave the soldiers a large sum of money, telling them, you are to say this, his disciples came during the night and stole him away while you were asleep. If this report gets to the governor, we'll satisfy him, we'll give him money and keep you out of trouble. So they said, it didn't happen. Let's do some fake news. Let's get that out there. I thought about this for some time. Why would men do this? Well, the only thing I can come up with is this, because men and women who are engrossed with themselves and their own self-importance are people without a conscience, and they therefore live as though they have done nothing that causes them regret. They don't see the need for a second chance because they're full of themselves, or Australians would say full of something else. The trouble is, I think, we are more like Taylor, who I mentioned at the very beginning, than the religious elite who are self-absorbed. I have followed Jesus for 45 years now. And during these last 45 years, I've needed to go to Galilee often. Sometimes my words and actions cause pain in others that is quite deep. Sometimes life's headwinds have been so fierce, I have nearly given up following him. But each time Jesus calls, I'll see you in Galilee. Come, let's start again. If you followed Jesus for some time and yet fallen into temptation's arms, Jesus calls you, come. Come to Galilee. Let me scrub the ink out of your soul. And we'll start again. If you followed Jesus but you've turned away from him, maybe you find yourself standing next to a man called Robert Robinson. Robinson started following Christ in 1752 when he was age 17. A few years later, he felt the call to be a pastor and a hymn writer. And at 23 years of age, passionate about Jesus, he wrote this song. Come thou fount of every blessing, tune my heart to sing thy grace, streams of mercy never ceasing, calls for songs of loudest praise. Teach me some melodious sonnet sung by flaming tongues above. Praise the mount I'm fixed upon it, mount of thy redeeming love. But he knew himself all too well at the age of 23, and so he wrote verse 3. Oh, to grace, how great a debtor, daily I'm constrained to be. Let thy goodness like a fetter bind my wandering heart to thee. Prone to wander, Lord, I feel it, prone to leave the God I love. Here's my heart, O take and seal it for thy courts above. Some years later, Robinson turned his back on Jesus and walked away. The story is told that one day Robinson was on a stagecoach riding with some people, and he noticed a woman deeply engrossed in a hymn book, and they started a conversation. In the process of the conversation, she would hum a hymn and come back to the conversation. And at one point, this lady turned to Robinson and asked him what he thought of the hymn that she was humming. And he burst into tears and said, Madam, I am the poor, unhappy man who wrote that hymn many years ago, and I would give 1,000 worlds if I had them to enjoy those feelings again. If that is you, Jesus says, come. Come to Galilee, and we will start afresh. Maybe you've never followed Jesus. Maybe you didn't know that he existed or was not aware of what he did or why this weekend's so important. But he offers you a reset for the whole of your life. Come, he says. Come, he says. Would you like to take that offer up? Is my question to you now. Some of you might say, I need to think about that some more. I've never heard all that kind of stuff. Well, if that's you, as Amy said at the beginning, we have this pack we'd love to put in your hands tonight. And inside is a recording of Jesus' life in the Gospel of Mark. It's a fresh translation. We'd love to give it to you if you'd like to take that on the way out. Some might think, I don't think what you're talking about is worth thinking about. I think the chief priests were right. I would beg you to take a copy of Mark's Gospel and look at the evidence again. Some of you might say, man, I'm ready to get a reset now. I want that. Well, it can happen in a moment, in a heartbeat. And so I'm going to pray and invite you to pray. This is how we'll do it. I'm going to pray a few words and then I'm going to ask God to listen to you. And so you can say whatever comes to your mind in the quietness of your mind to God and he'll listen to you. And then I'll pray again. And then our time is nearly done. So let's pray. God in heaven, we thank you for your great kindness to us. For we who are men and women with ink all through our soul, you found a way to bring us back to you and to remove the ink. Jesus, we thank you that you volunteered yourself to be the sacrifice that would wash away the ink in our souls. And now I ask God, would you listen to the cries of the people in this room? Would you hear what they have to say in the quietness of their minds? O Lord Jesus, who rose from the dead and gave us all this evidence that you did in fact rise, listen to the cries of people. Assure them that if they're returning to you after a time away, that there is a place for them to come. Assure them if they've put their hand out to you for the first time, that you do listen and that you are in the process of scrubbing their souls of the ink that is there. For the rest of us, help us to grow ever grateful that you are a God of great kindness. Help us look forward to the day where we'll see your face. For we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.